Ken Lovett and Bob Ross, welcome to KGOU. You both had foundations that share some common concerns, and I want to start with one of those, which is education. And Ken, we'll begin with you. So first, just give me the overview of what the George Kaiser Family Foundation is focusing on now in the area of education.
Sure. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the invitation. With regard to education, our real strategy at George Kaiser Family Foundation is to select the kinds of investments and projects that we think create the best environment for opportunity for young kids, especially those born into difficult circumstances or live in poverty. And while we support higher education, while we certainly support a lot of projects in K-12 education like Teach for America, the bulk of our investments, to the tune of roughly $30 million a year almost, are really in the field of early childhood education, so birth to three, because we're convinced that the evidence shows that you get the best possible return by intervening early, helping kids with their vocabulary and their social-emotional skills. And as we have our conversation today, I think we can elaborate on the evidence that's out there that the life success and the life outcomes for kids that get that early dosage of love and tenderness and early education is by far better than those who don't. So it can be an expensive investment, but it's a lot more expensive not to do it.
And Bob, education is also a priority for Inasmuch. What major initiatives is your foundation supporting?
Kurt, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Inasmuch Foundation, which was started by Edith Gaylord in 1982, has been focused on education for almost his entire history. We also do health and human services, arts, and other historic preservation, other grant making in the community and in the state. As far as education, Inasmuch Foundation, we see it as kind of a dual track. We are focused on helping traditional public education as well as reforming education, and that has to do with things like charters, Teach for America, things like that. Like George Kaiser Family Foundation, we also are very interested in early education. We were the main philanthropy backing EduCare coming to Oklahoma City. We were following George Kaiser Family Foundation's footsteps in that regard as they were building an EduCare in Tulsa. We also provide funding to Smart Start Central Oklahoma for a program called Early Birds, which prepares families and children for kindergarten. And we have several other programs that we support that are focused solely on early education. But we also, like George Kaiser Family Foundation, focus on K through 12 and education reform.
You know, it's kind of fascinating that we've got foundations at both ends of the turnpike with this focus on early child education. And in fact, you know, it's no surprise that that's the case because we live in a state that's made early child education a commitment and a priority for now several decades. People are often surprised that Oklahoma is such a leader in early child education. They expect us, to be a leader in, football or a bunch of bad things. But we've really been way ahead of the curve on early child education with universal pre-K, and especially now with more and more investments in even earlier phases targeted at at-risk kids. And really, the country looks to Oklahoma, looks to Inasmuch Foundation, our foundation, state policy as national leaders in this field. So it's nice to be working in this area, and I'm proud of Oklahoma to be such a leader.
Bob, you mentioned charter in terms of education. What types of projects have you been supporting in that specific area of education?
We've been a major supporter of KIPP for a long time, the Knowledge is Power program in Oklahoma City. It's a charter school that's 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th with over 200 children attending in northeast Oklahoma City. We also are backing the new John Rex Elementary Charter, which is going to be located in downtown Oklahoma City. And that's a very unique partnership between Oklahoma City Public Schools and the private community coming together to build a school through Maps for Kids funds and start a new pre-K through sixth grade school this August. So that's really exciting. We're also involved in bringing Lighthouse to Oklahoma City right now. So we're very involved in the charter movement. I think that's a very key piece to the puzzle. We feel like we have to kind of have a portfolio of opportunities for families and children to be able to choose and select and attend that portfolio. It's, like I said, very important to have traditional and Charter, Magnet, Enterprise, you name it, but a real portfolio for families to choose quality school and quality opportunities.
Education is on a lot of minds currently. We just had a huge rally recently at the state capitol in support of common education of public schools. Where is the intersection of where a foundation that's interested in education and those issues, how does that fit in with government and government policy? And I'd like you both to kind of address that question. Ken, do you want to start?
I think all of us, whether Inasmuch or George Kaiser Family Foundation or all the other foundations in the community are kind of wrestling with questions that really bridge closely with government functions also. I mean, we're trying to serve the neediest. We're trying to promote good education. We're trying to create, an economy that's vibrant through investments in infrastructure, not roads or bridges, but people and civic community building. So it bleeds over to policy quite a bit. And while private foundations can't technically lobby the government, we're always working on the direction that our state's going to take, and policymakers are always interested in the direction we're taking, and we're always interested in the direction they're taking, trying to get to a better result. We have found that there are really important ways for the philanthropic sector and the public sector to collaborate, and it really is what they call a virtuous circle, in the sense that I think the problems we deal with are really practically bottomless pit problems for foundations. You got to have government. Government's got to be your partner. You think foundations have money? Well, where the money really is with the public sector, so they've got to be partners. But when we do things together, it's nice in that also the public sector gets a partner that's really invested in the success of the project, that's given a lot of oversight, giving a lot of scrutiny, giving a lot of rigor. I think government programs tend to go from year to year without much reexamination. But if you have a private partner that's in it, especially if the business person's around and still the donor to the foundation, in my case in particular, we're actively looking at how every penny is spent and how is the effectiveness of the program. So that public-private partnership is real important, and it can obviously move into areas of being interested in policy, and investment in education is key. And obviously, we've got a ways to go to get kind of back to where we should be as far as funding education, but also we'd like to see changes in the way education's funded. So it's not just the same old, same old. We need to do things a lot differently, just as Bob was talking about as far as spurring innovation, like in charter schools.
And Bob, what's your reaction to that? How does you see Inasmuch working with government, and how does that intersection work with your foundation?
So private foundations can be more entrepreneurial. We can bring in ideas that are successful, possibly outside the state, around the country, bring them to Oklahoma. EduCare is a great example. But we can't expand EduCare to all the families that need it. We don't have the resources, right? And so that's the point where we kind of prove up a model show the stakeholders in government and policymakers what can be done, and so they can use that as a pilot, if you will, an example of what could be taken to a greater number of people because the state has the resources. So I think we can play a very important role, but like Ken said, it's a partnership, and we're all trying to make Oklahoma a better state. We're all trying to provide better programs, better education, better health to all of our citizens in Oklahoma. So how do we work together to make that happen?
You've both talked about Oklahoma and, of course, focused on that, and I'm raises the question in my mind anyway as to what is it about having a foundation that focuses on its state where it is? Why is that important?
I think we've got an interesting dynamic with our big philanthropists and philanthropies in Oklahoma, in that they are pretty regionally oriented. You got some vast fortunes that have been created through some families. Unlike some other major foundations throughout the world or throughout the United States that are trying to solve poverty in Africa or invest in climate change issues around the world, the folks here are really more focused on problems at the community and the state level. And that's a nice – I think it's a great asset for the state of Oklahoma. And it's interesting to sort of identify the fact that our foundation seem to be more invested in the state. I don't know quite what's in the water here that makes our billionaires or our wealthy folks want to solve Oklahoma problems, but it's a good good result. I hope for all those future billionaires out there, I hope they also kind of invest their money back in Oklahoma because we certainly need it.
Do you reflect that too? How does Inasmuch fit in terms of being an Oklahoma focused entity?
Right. I think at Inasmuch Foundation we focus on Oklahoma. We understand, you know, we're a young state and we're able to get things done that possibly you couldn't get done in other states with larger populations or different history. Where, you know, Oklahomans feel like we can solve our own problems. You know, we don't need people from the outside coming in and telling us how to solve our problems. So, okay, our philanthropy dollars stay in Oklahoma to solve our own problems. I think from our standpoint, you know, we have limited resources, both in the private sector and the public sector. And so we first feel like we need to solve our problems before we take off trying to solve, nationwide or even world problems.
Okay, I want to turn now to a different topic, and Ken, this one would focus with the George Kaiser Family Foundation, because it's really been working and been on the forefront of reducing Oklahoma's female incarceration rate. And just again, an overview on how you work within the criminal justice system or work outside of that system to help achieve this goal.
Well, we have an interesting process at our foundation for the kind of projects we undertake. We don't really take applications for funding, so instead we really try to highlight what problems we face as a state or in our own community in Tulsa that just kind of scream out to us as, gosh, this is just an out of control problem. And then the second filter is, well, could we actually make a difference in changing it? And when those two vectors come together, we tend to get involved. And, you know, the issue of the rate of female incarceration in Oklahoma, I mean, this is a state I love. I grew up here, but it's a big disgrace. To lead the nation by twice the national average in the number of nonviolent women that we're putting in prison who have kids, who could be working, who face big addiction problems rather than violent problems of violence. It's just got to be addressed. So we have put together a number of strategies, and we've worked closely with Inasmuch Foundation, Bob Ross, and others in Oklahoma City that put together a project called Remerge. We've put together a project called Women in Recovery. We're now serving about 100 women who would otherwise face often 7 to 10 years of imprisonment, but they work with us, with the judges, and we have a very intensive 12 to 18 month program, and we've got a high success rate. And when they finish that program, they're not going to jail. They're going back to their kids, et cetera. They put their lives together. So but I will tell you, after having worked on this project for 3-4 years and invested a lot of money, we're not making much progress. I mean, we are helping the women who are in it, but the rates, especially in Tulsa, are still horrible. They're actually getting worse. And so nobody at the policy level has really seriously dealt with the problem. There's lip service to it, but there are simple, conservative style changes that need to be made. And they pass it unanimously in Georgia. They've done it in Texas. This is we could flip a switch on this problem. We need some leadership at the Capitol take a series of reforms that will be popular on the conservative side, popular on the Democrat side, popular with the business community. Save the state a bunch of money, keep a lot of families intact, and we just got to get it done.
Bob, when you look at issues as the leader of a foundation, how do you pick? I mean, obviously, we look at female incarceration, and that one bubbles to the top because we have that mark, you know, nationally. How do you look at something where you feel like you can make a difference? How do you decide that? That seems like that would be difficult.
It is difficult, and sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong. We do try to look at what our return on the investment would be, for example, on women in incarceration, we felt like our Remerge program is a good return on investment. Right now we have 52 women enrolled in the program that account for 114 minor children. And so if we can – and Remerge has graduated 16 women and has a 90% success rate. But the 52 women currently enrolled and their 114 children, think about the money saved if we can get those moms on track. Think about the money saved in the future if those children have a mom and they don't suffer the same cycle of poverty and imprisonment that their mother is facing. So from our standpoint, that return is obviously justified from financial, but then from a moral standpoint, very difficult to measure, but certainly an important piece to it that we're doing the compassionate thing for these families and helping them and helping the children.
You know, to elaborate on that point that Bob has made, there's actually a very fascinating bill, very important bill, I think, that's making progress in the state legislature right now, authored by Senator Kim David, and it's called a pay-for-success model. And the notion is philanthropy will advance the costs of these kind of diversion programs. Women in Recovery or Remerge will advance the cost of an alternative to prison and basically come back to state government 3 years later. And if the client or the woman is not returned to the criminal justice system, then we've clearly saved state government roughly $100,000 because she would have been in prison for 5 or 7 years. And only if she's stayed clean and not committed a violation of the law, then the state would reimburse the provider, Women in Recovery or Remerge, half the savings. So $100,000 saved, then maybe an investment of $50,000 to serve the next three women or the next five women. And it's called a pay-for-success model. It's business-like. It's smart. And that could be an approach to really tackle the problem.
One of the other areas where Oklahoma has not very good marks is in the health of its residents, of its citizens. And what endeavors is Inasmuch working with to try to improve that situation in the state?
Yeah, Kurt, it's a tough one. With our poverty levels, particularly in Oklahoma City, if you just look at Oklahoma City public schools, we're now at 94% free and reduced lunch, meaning families are at or below the poverty line. So we do a lot of different things. We work with variety care. We work with dental programs. We work with mental health programs, counseling programs, and I've been trying to make investments to help these families gain access to quality medical care. And I know Ken has some. They've made some really successful and interesting progress in Tulsa on this.
Yeah, well, you're nice to say we've made progress. I think healthcare is of all the areas where we invest. I sometimes say, did we actually do anything to change things? It's so hard. Patterns are so entrenched. But we are working on a few things. You know, we're trying to get people enrolled. And, you know, if they're eligible for some kind of insurance and they just need to be educated about it, obviously we want to help them get enrolled. And that's important. Probably our biggest investment involves actually the University of Oklahoma. We put almost $100 million to work to create a school of community medicine at OU. And the idea is it's actually pretty simple. It's going to take a long time to see if it works. But to orient the curriculum to encourage doctors to take care of the uninsured and the indigent as much as possible, and we offer a free ride to every student who then offers 4 years of service to a low-income community, rural or urban, Oklahoma City or Tulsa, et cetera. So we're just kind of we made the investment 4 or 5 years ago. The university just converted the medical school in Tulsa from a 2-year to a 4-year, put this curriculum in place, and we're just kind of getting it rolling. These things take time. But yeah, healthcare is a big problem in Oklahoma, and it's a tough one for philanthropy or government.
Bob, we're talking about some of those things that you push at in terms of a foundation and supporting it and then wait for that return on investment. Is there a project or a program that Inasmuch helped with that you would say look at how this worked?
One recent example I would say is the our partnership with 100,000 Homes campaign to end chronic homelessness. We're working with the Homeless Alliance in Oklahoma City to do that. And Tulsa has a same initiative, although Tulsa has been at this much longer than Oklahoma City and has a great track record. But the Homeless Alliance 100,000 Homes campaign to end chronic homelessness is a collaboration among more than 30 government, faith-based, and nonprofit agencies in Oklahoma City with the goal of ending homelessness. And we've had some great success. In January 2013, when we did the point-in-time count of all the homeless in Oklahoma City, there were 288 chronically homeless folks. And in this just past January, 2014, there were 74. And so this program is really has kind of inspired our community because it's looked at homelessness in a totally different light. Instead of first serving a homeless person, trying to get them off alcohol or drugs and then get them housed, it's called housing first model. So you get them housed and then you provide the wraparound social services to get them counseling and get them off drugs and off alcohol. And so it's been a real eye-opening experience for us because we've brought the community together to do something that was never done before and frankly had a lot of skepticism. You know, you're going to put homeless people in an apartment building before you provide them any treatment, any counseling, nothing. Yes, you know, we're going to take this gamble, and it's worked. It's paid off.
So the question to you, Ken. Sure. What's that? What's your poster project?
Gosh, well, I'll hit. We got a lot of projects that are not posters too that haven't worked too well, but a couple that I'm excited about. One, and I'm sort of embarrassed that it's not mission critical. It's not really about anti-poverty efforts, but it's just about good living and good life in Tulsa. I would invite anybody who's listening to come to the Brady Arts District, a new area that's been enlivened and strengthened in Tulsa, kind of just north of downtown. It's an arts and entertainment district, and we bought the Woody Guthrie Archives from New York and repatriated them to Oklahoma, created a museum there, and the whole district is kind of alive and fun, and that's going to be – that's proved to be a very tangible and exciting, I guess, success. It's harder to see success in your more in these deeper social issues. I am kind of excited about something we're working on related to what we call the word gap. You know, we know that kids get to different starting places in middle school and elementary school and kindergarten, but what we've really found through some of the research is that kids from low-income families have a much smaller vocabulary just simply because they hear fewer words by the time they're 4 years old. In fact, 32 million words fewer in the first 4 years from a low-income family to a professional family, the research shows. So we're venturing into some things we've never done before, which is just social messaging and PR to help educate parents and grandparents about read to your kids, sing to your kids, narrate the day, point and talk, because we think that can actually make a pretty big difference. So we're just launching that, a lot of excitement about it.
And Kurt, one example of a great public-private partnership has been Teach for America. And you know Teach for America, these are some of America's top graduates that agree to work in inner-city public schools for 2 years. And so Schusterman Foundation, Kaiser Foundation in Tulsa, Inasmuch Foundation Oklahoma City have been very involved in bringing this to Oklahoma. It's very difficult to get Teach for America to come to your community. Yeah, that's a good point. So Schusterman Foundation, Kaiser Foundation, Inasmuch Foundation, Walton Foundation been very instrumental in bringing this program to Oklahoma and building it to make sure it's a success. Well, last year we got $2.5 million from the state to expand into rural communities. So that's a great example of how the foundation's kind of entrepreneurial spirit can bring a great program that isn't in Oklahoma, bring it to the state, show how it is successful for a couple of years, and then bring the policymakers in to say, hey, let's expand this into the rural communities. Let's expand this statewide.
What are some of the misconceptions that you think that people have when they you know read about a foundation? They may not encounter a foundation very much, even if the you know the name is on something, some service or something they access. But I know they might see in the newspaper or hear on the radio that foundation's given this much money to something. What do you think some of the misconceptions are? How do you tell people what your foundation does? What's it about? How do you overcome some of what might be those misconceptions?
I mean, I'd like to think that we don't have a whole lot of that, at least with where we operate with our Tulsa focus and our Oklahoma focus, because, you know, I've got a small team of great folks, a dozen or so of us, and we're pretty invested in the community. We're around a lot. We're talking to folks. You know, yes, we get a lot of crazy letters and, you know, people think, hey, you know, why not send me $1 million? But 99% of the interactions for us are pretty down-to-earth conversations with our colleagues in Tulsa who are working on homelessness, working on mental health, working on education, and we're just brainstorming and trying to solve problems together. So, I think if you're the Bill Gates Foundation and you get a lot of nuttiness and protests and misunderstanding, but I don't know. It's really – it's a pretty relaxed working relationship between us, I think, our foundation, and the community, you know, in Oklahoma.
How about for Inasmuch?
I always try to explain our founder, Edith Kenny Gaylord, and her passions. She was obviously a very successful journalist, came from a journalism family, but she was just passionate about helping and serving those less fortunate than her, particularly mothers and babies, and strengthening families. And so I explain that. But I have had people come to me and say, why are you so focused on, you know, the public schools or the public school board? Why don't you focus on city council or something else? And I say, well, you know, that really isn't in our founder's belief or Edith's understanding of how she could be successful in her philanthropy. And so what we try to do is continue her passions. Now, times change. The needs of the community change. And so we change with those needs of the community. And we hope that we're picking the right investments and making the right decisions to improve our city and our state.
You both deal with a lot of institutions and organizations and people who want to help, have some desire to help. And I'd like, as we come close to our close, I'd like each of you to kind of give your view on how a person can make a difference.
Sure.
We're not all a George Kaiser or an Edith Kenny Gaylord that, you know, has the money to fund major projects, but what can I do? What can an individual do?
Well, it's a great and compelling question. I think you know, there really are a dozen different things, but getting engaged in a high quality nonprofit organization is a huge way to help. Getting on a local board, being a volunteer, choosing a career, you know, to help those less fortunate or to help solve an important social problem. Frankly, there's a lot of entrepreneurial genius that's required at these nonprofits, and I think they can be compelling to our smartest and most talented college grads. That's a big one. I also think that all of us could kind of think about our own personal philanthropy, whether we're given $100 or, you know, big time more, about prioritizing where the biggest needs are, where the biggest problems are, and where that dollar can go the furthest. We tend to kind of give out of habit to the institutions that we came from, and there's a role for that. But also, I think that there's also a bigger role for folks to sort of think about, you know, what are the biggest problems we have in our community? Where are we falling short? And how can my dollar help advance a solution? And when, by a little more focus on that, I think that even that can play a role.
And Bob, what would you say to somebody who, let's say they pick up the phone or run into you out on the street and say, you know, I want to help in Oklahoma City. How do you think I should get involved?
I just had this conversation with someone in Oklahoma City, a prominent individual that wanted to make a difference but didn't know how. And what we talked about is, you know, what his passions were. And we kind of decided this meeting, you know, he should really focus on individuals and going out to, you know, high schools and helping students discuss their dreams and figure out a path to get there, not to be an NBA star or NFL, but really, you know, if you're passionate about the arts or you're passionate about math or science or engineering, what's the path to get there? And I thought that was really neat. And I just had this conversation this week with him. And so he's going to focus on individuals. People need a vote. In school board elections, I mean, no one votes, and I don't know why. You know, if we, you know, need to change the date of the voting, or if it's a lack of passion. And then when you join a nonprofit, you know, get on a board, like Ken said, get on a board that you're passionate about, but push that board and push that executive director to run like a company and be the best they can be. It seems like on a lot of nonprofit boards, they want to continue just doing the same thing they've always done. There isn't a lot of entrepreneurialism and dynamic thinking. And this is certainly not the case for all of them. But challenge your executive director, challenge your board, challenge the staff to think beyond just what we're currently doing. How do we get bigger? How do we serve more people? And take that entrepreneurial spirit to your service.
Bob Ross and Ken Lovett, I thank you both so much for taking the time to be with us and talking about your foundations.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, Kurt. Really enjoyed discussing all these important topics.